For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a treasure. Get it on. Welcome to CarCast. Matt Kroll. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea over there. Lots to get to on today's show.
Yeah.
First, I want to say this show is brought to you by Castrol. This is CarCast from Castrol, so we thank you very much for sponsorship, Castrol. And let's not forget about Geico. You can visit geico.com and check out Castrol. Titanium Strong for maximum engine performance. Rad Power Bikes, radpowerbikes.com/podcast. And Zybar. Let's never forget about Zybar for engine, for better engine performance, horsepower, fuel economy, lower under hood temperatures. Zybar, ultra thin coating that reduces radiant heat by 90%. Put Zybar on, take heat off. Visit Zycoat.com and do it now. It's a great product. All right. So let's see. We got Dave Kindig. Kindig.
Yeah, he's going to be calling in because we saw his the Gullwing Mercedes that he built at SEMA, and it looks so cool to me that I figured let's chat with him a little bit about it. I know he's done a bunch of cool stuff, and he's got his TV show, and he's a great designer, but that was the car that said, let's get him on the phone, to me at least.
I watch a show, A Pox on You. Because when we were walking and talking the other day, or I was walking, you were walking, we weren't walking on the same street, but we were talking. I said, I watched a show, but I've not seen that Mercedes on Dave Kindig's show. And you said, I don't think it's an episode. I think it's like online or something. And I said, oh, okay, because I pretty much keep up on his episodes. I don't remember seeing that.
I just thought it was like a SEMA debut.
That episode. And then I went to Kimmel's birthday party, and then I got a little stoned. And then I came home at like midnight, and I was flipping through my shows, and there's Kindigit Designs over there. And Dave and Bitchin' Rides, name of the show. And I went, huh, well, I'm talking to him tomorrow. Let me see what he's got cooking.
Yeah.
And the Mercedes was on the episode.
Perfect. So we don't need to get him to call in.
It was perfect, except for it was a cliffhanger. They didn't finish it. They just got it. So we were at the point in the show where it's a Mercedes fiberglass bodied sort of kit car. They always screw up the dimensions on these things. I don't know why you would want to do that. Like, my feeling is I don't know what year it is, but hey, man, we're making a kit car. Just someone go measure up a Mercedes Gullwing. They're at every fucking auction all the time. Someone go find someone, throw a tape measure on it. And then before we start making our kit car, let's just make it to the exact dimensions of the actual car. But obviously in the episode of Dave's show, they went and found, I think they're out of Utah, they went and found a Gullwing and they threw a tape on everything. And of course, everything is off.
Yeah.
And also, when you see it, you can see it looks weird.
Yeah. I don't know what the point of that is. Is that like a trademark thing? They're like, well, it's not a Gullwing. It doesn't look anything like a Gullwing. It's a different size. It's the size of a Miata.
Well, it looks much like a Gullwing, except for many of the dimensions are off. And I don't get it. Maybe there's some copyright thing. Maybe they have to be off. You know, maybe it's a thing like in music, you can't use a Beach Boys song, but you can use a sound-alike song or feel-alike song. Yeah, and those are the songs you hear in those bad TV shows where it's like kind of reminds you of a Beach Boys song, but it's not the Beach Boys song. And you go, why didn't they use the Beach Boys song here? Because that was $100,000.
Yeah.
And they don't have
that. Yeah, they don't have that.
They have a catalog of a whole bunch of songs that sound kind of like a Beach Boys song. I don't know if that's... We should find that out.
And yeah, maybe Dave knows.
He may know. I don't know who makes these kits, but the kit is no bueno if you have to take the kit and fix it.
Right. But maybe Dave said, hey, we got your kit, and it's not the right size. What's going on? And someone's like, well, you know, we had to do that because of whatever.
Maybe.
Legal reason.
I don't know. I mean, they've done a lot of...
Or they're like, what?
Well, they've done... Let's figure this out. They've done Cobras all day long. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different companies that do Cobras.
Yeah.
Some of them are like, I feel like officially licensed, but I don't know if other ones are.
Yeah, and they can't call them Cobras.
Right, but...
And they can't call them Shelbys.
Can they get the exact size and dimension of a AC Bristol? And then the other thing is they'll do... I remember when I talked to Pete Brock years ago at the Italiano Concourse, Pebble Beach, we were walking and talking on the golf course. And, when we walk and we talk, I put my hand in his back pocket.
Yeah.
And he puts his hand in my back pocket like we're in high school.
I mean,
and we're
going
steady.
Yeah.
And we got to his Shelby Daytona, and he was explaining to me that this one is not the shape of the one that he built in the 60s.
Right.
He said they were in a rush, and there were other things he wanted to do. So he went for this replica or tribute car. He actually did the shit he wanted to do.
Yeah, I think that's the super performance car. But they went to him and said, we want to do this. And he said, well, if we're going to do it, you're right. He's like, let's finish it.
Let's
do it the way it was supposed to be finished.
Yes. Also, I don't want to say I told you so. I didn't tell anyone so. But I way back in the day, I would always look at all the Cobra kit cars and I'd go, that's fine. But someone needs to do a Daytona.
Yeah.
That's a bitching car. I thought it was just I'm a coupe kind of guy and a long hood kind of guy. And I just went, if you're going to build a replica, build that car. Don't build a Cobra. And lo and behold, there they are.
There they are.
Probably more popular these days than maybe even Cobras. And if you think about that car in a kit form, build it right, put a crate motor in it, fuel injection, put some air conditioning in there.
Yeah.
Hell, maybe even some power windows or whatever, some sound deadening shit. Drive that thing to Vegas.
Yeah, it could be a cool car.
Yeah, I would make that thing like a real driver.
Yeah.
You know,
like might as well make a cool, fun car out of it. Something to drive around.
We're looking at the Bitch and Rides 55 Mercedes Gullwing.
Yeah, all I'm seeing is it's a fiberglass replica that was made sometime in the 90s, about 20 to 24 of them were made.
Mm-hmm.
And he was given it to a guy named Rich Buckley gave it to Ken Digg about 2 years ago.
Well, we'll talk to him. I'm a big fan of his show. All right. Let me... And you got the new Jag.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about the new Jag.
Yeah. Okay. So, the Jag I-Pace is the all-electric SUV. I say SUV. It fits in that subcompact SUV category, but it's about the size of your midsize sedan. It's about the size of your XF Jag, but just figure it's a little higher and it's got a hatchback to it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it a lot. It's fun. It's quick. It's quiet. It's got all the things you want in an electric car, and it's got some pep to it. It zooms around.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it. And they sent the ones white. It's got the red seats and whatnot.
My wife's Tesla should be.
Yeah.
Except for Tesla doesn't offer a red fucking interior. What the fuck is wrong with those? Like, hey, we offer four interior colors, none of which are red, which is the fucking best.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. My wife got the fucking X that's white with the white interior. But every time you pass a car that's white with a red interior, you go, oh, shit, that's stunning.
Yeah.
What goes on at Tesla that nobody figured that out?
I don't know. Maybe aren't they offering
it's fucking
it like
weird.
That?
Everything is weird. The whole fucking world is weird, right?
Because this car looks good.
There's no. Here's what happens. When I pass his car that's white with a red interior, or any car that's white and red interior, or the fucking thing that the guy did, the X, Tesla X white that someone put a red interior, here's what doesn't happen. Here's what doesn't happen. What doesn't happen is I pass your car and I go, oh, it's white with a red interior. I love that. And then everyone around me goes, oh, it's okay, but it'd be so much better if the interior was white. That doesn't happen. You know what does happen? Universally, everybody goes, yes, it looks good. So good. And when I say to my wife, you know, your white interior is okay, but it'd be bitching if it was red, she goes, abso-fucking-lutely. And we don't agree on almost anything, but we do agree on that. Yeah. We do agree on that. So Tesla, in their infinite wisdom, came out of the fucking car. Have they never had red interiors for 7 years?
It's wild.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, this thing's nice, and I like it. And the red interior
is sharp. But Chris, what is going on? What's going on in the world? What, there's not anyone raises their hand at Tesla and goes, hey, boss man, you got black? Yeah, you got brown. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got white.
You got white, right?
Which nobody wants.
You know what the best is? What? Red. Yeah, let me show you a few pictures. Look how killer that shit looks.
Yeah. Look at that picture. Look how sharp that looks. Look at those seats. They're fantastic.
Okay. Now I'm angry.
What are you doing, Matt?
But what? What gives?
It's much red. It's like enough red. The seats, the door panels, like they got it down.
We're looking at your car. It looks fucking amazing because it has a red interior on a white exterior.
It's good.
It's good. And it's low slung.
It is.
And,
yeah.
And the range you got was about 230 on it?
240, 250. When they dropped it off, it said about 250. I think Jaguar claims about 240. I don't know the full specs on it. Maybe you should drive it so you can compare it to the Model X. I don't have time in the SUV, the Tesla, to kind of really say the difference. I'm sure you want to get down to the nitty gritty. You got to hit up somebody like Edmunds.com and find out how long is it take to charge.
But this is their first real move into full electric. Porsche's coming. It's all coming.
Everybody's coming. But this is a competitor, and it's selling well. From what I understand, it's already selling well. Orders are up. They're selling these things.
What is the base on these things?
About 70,000. Mm-hmm. And you can load them up, and I think the one we're driving is about 90,000.
Well, speaking of electric power, Rad Power Bikes, consumer direct electronic bikes, 5 unique models. No huge markups by the dealers or third-party retailers. Often less than half the price of comparable bikes on the market. I'll tell you, get around on one of these things. They scoot, man. Mm-hmm. Cyber Monday sale, November 26th. Deals up to $400 off on all models, one day only, plus free shipping in the lower 48. All models have a 750 watts of power. Most powerful motor on an e-bike. Well, that they can have and still maintain their street legal status because the government won't let them go insane. No license required. Ride anywhere. You ride a bike. And like I said, man, these things scoot.
I love this idea. I ride electric scooters and bikes all around my neighborhood, all around Venice and Santa Monica.
Well, let's go with radpowerbikes.com/podcast to learn more. Don't forget their Cyber Monday sale, November 26th. Say big. radpowerbikes.com/podcast. Yeah. Check it out.
So here's my problem with the electric thing real quick is I love the car. It's great. It looks great. It's fast. They did a pretty good job for a first time out with Jaguar. They did a nice job on this car, and it's got a nice Jaguar interior feel to it. But geez, for the love of God, if you don't own one of these things and have the big charging station at your house, you're screwed. You can't the public network, the public support for this thing, the charging network is bullshit. I went to like 3 places last night trying to get it to charge. They were full, or there was somebody's gas car parked in the electric car spot. So they're like, fuck you, we need to park there. And then I found a place like at a motorcycle dealer. I go to like plug it in. I was like, I'm going to leave it for a few hours at least. Let me get some charge in this thing. I know it takes 10 hours or something, but I was like, I can come back in the middle of the night, get 5 hours in it, pick up another 50 miles. That's good, right? I go back. There's a gate. Gate's closed. You can't get the car. It's in jail now, right?
Really?
And the gate is 2 feet high. It's not like a fence. It's just so you don't park in that lot.
Right.
Right? And when they close the gate, they turn off the fucking chargers.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So the thing is plugged in. It's doing nothing, and I can't move it. So I had to go back this morning to get it out of jail.
Now, we don't know what time they turn on the...
No, I don't know. The dealer said they're open like 9 in the morning to 6. And I guess they just close the gate. And they're like, screw you. Why not leave the machine on? I'm stuck there anyway.
I don't know.
Right? By the way, it's not the like a public free machine. Like, I paid for it. I typed in my... I went online scanned the code. And I was like, God, $5 seems cheap. It's been there for hours. No, because it shut off like 20 minutes into the charge.
Wow. How many miles did you get charged out of it?
Oh, I don't know. None. One mile. Like, because 5 minutes, you know, whatever, an hour or two doesn't do much for you. You need 10 hours on this, especially the public stations. You need hours into it. So, you know, now we've got to jag that instead of 150 or 160 miles left, it's got like 95 left. And, you know, we've got the rest of the week. So I've got to find a way to plug it in. and in this neighborhood, the only public charging station is in the parking garage of IKEA. So I can go park it at IKEA for 8 hours and come back.
Well, now, what I don't get is I have 220 over at the other shop.
Yeah. And they gave us a charger in the back, in the trunk, and it's got a plug. But the plug, this four-prong plug, I don't know what it is, 220, 250 or something, doesn't plug. Oh, by the way, in your shop... On that wall, you know what I'm talking about. On one side, there's 220. On the other side, there's 220. They have different types of plugs, and neither of them work with what this car came with.
Right. And this
car, so I've got to find some kind of adapter.
Doesn't come with any kind of pigtail adapter.
No. And I asked Jag, and they're like, we're sorry. This is a prototype. We don't have the adapters available yet. And I was like, okay. And they're like, we gave you on the key fob, they're like, here's the free card so you can go to some of the public stations, and here's an app and you can find them. There's none near me. There's none here near the shop. And the few that are here, like at the IKEA, is a different brand. So you can still go there, but you pay for it. It's a terrible infrastructure.
Well,
if you have to have these goddamn chargers like at your house.
Yeah.
If you rent
an
apartment or something, you're screwed.
No. Yeah, but this car's not for renters.
No.
Anyway, it's
love the car, hate the infrastructure.
Well, it's not that you hate the infrastructure, it's that it's not in place yet. It's just there's not enough. It's not ubiquitous enough. There's too many people driving around in, I don't know, what do you do in your Prius? How do you charge that thing up, Max Pata?
Well, it's hybrid.
It's all
hybrid.
Just charges itself.
Yeah.
There's no plug-in.
The newer ones plug in, right?
But yours doesn't. Okay.
Here's
the whole thing. We're not quite there yet.
We're not there yet.
And we're out with this stuff kind of celebrating it. And we're not quite like I'll give you an example from the model hobby standpoint. When I used to fly remote control airplanes in 1999, 2000, 2001, they just came on with like electric power and inducted fan, and you could get these electric powered ducted fan jets.
Yeah.
Except for the battery was a brick of basically probably about 8 C-size batteries daisy chained together.
Yeah.
So if you picture holding.
Yeah, and not lithium. They're like nickel metal hydride. They're heavy.
C-size cell.
Yeah.
8, 9 of them daisy chain in a shrink wrap thing and put it in your hand.
Yeah.
It's fucking heavy.
It's heavy.
Now picture like a styrofoam plane with a wingspan of like 27 inches and a little ducted fan in the middle of it. And imagine trying to get that thing to fly.
Yeah.
Like it would, you could, you're like, mean, you'd have to chuck it as hard as you could. Like it wouldn't take off, you know? And then you'd chuck as hard as you could. It'd be like, you'd have to just nurse it, like you could never get it.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is the thought was there before the technology was there. Like, oh, ducted fan, a jet, like an electric powered jet.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's cool. No, it's not, because we weren't there. Now, 15, 18 years later, those things are all over the place and they work.
Yeah.
And so the electric car and the infrastructure and all that is going to just follow that same model. 5 years from now, 18 years from now, there's going to be charging stations everywhere and everything's going to work and it's all going to be fine. We're not there yet.
And I'm talking about plugging it into the wall, that outlet issue, but there's the other side of the plug that plugs into your car, and everybody's got their own proprietary one too.
Right.
Like, what? Come on. We can't just do one.
Well, they're going to have to start making, pigtails that are like adapter pigtails. All right. Tell us about Geico, and we'll call Dave.
Dave. Geico, you know, everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off dry cleaning, you pick up some milk, and now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list. You don't have to pick up or drop off anything. You just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding you can do today. Go to geico.com. Check them out.
At Geico.com. All right. Let's see. We're going to call Dave. We'll see when he pops online, whatever. Like I said, I'm a big fan of his show.
Yeah.
He does a lot of really nice work. All right. Line three. Dave?
Yes, sir.
Good to speak to you.
Hello.
You too, Adam. Big fan.
Well, I'm a big fan of your TV show and of your work.
Thank you.
Bitchin' Rides is the name of the show. New episodes Tuesdays, 9 o'clock on Velocity. Sorry, Viscosity. I'm thinking about oil too much.
Velocity. I guess it's Motor Trend Network now. I'm not sure.
I watch as many car shows as I can. And, you know, there's certain shows you kind of watch and they're sort of like Pimp My Ride. Like, hey, we're going to put in an aquarium in the back of this chick's Nova.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, but I'm a car guy. I'm not a fish guy.
I like to be able to hold my face high in public, so no fish bowls in front of the gauges, please.
Good. Yes, Dave's stuff is really nice stuff, really high-end stuff. And
you're a fantastic designer, Dave.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Dave sits there and, you know, draws it out a la Chip Foose and those who came before him, and then they go out and they make it happen. In the past, they've done some really cool rides. It seems like it's Camaro-centric a little. I feel like I've seen a lot of Camaros done, but you did the bus, I think 21 or 23 window bus, mm-hmm. which is pretty insane. You did that Futurama GM big truckster, which is insane.
Yeah, the GM Futureliner. That was by far one of the biggest projects that the company had ever taken on, and kind of, I think that's really what kind of stood out. And that's actually what got Bitchin' Rides started, was the Futureliner. We put out a media blitz that we were going to be building one of those. And they were like, okay, we know who this kid is from previous stuff that we've seen on, Speed Channel with Hot Rod Television, My Classic Car, and so forth. So Bob Scanlon and David Lee, they already knew who we were, but they were like, what's he doing with the GM Futureliner, you know, when he's kind of set up to be building these high-end show cars? So I think that's really what stood out and certainly was a challenge for us.
And more recently, and Matt saw it, I was sort of in and out of SEMA in 3 hours, but Matt saw the 55 Mercedes Gullwing, and we'll start digging into that car. Dave, you tell me. He also saw, I think, a 328 or 308 Ferrari that had been done up that was really cool as well.
Another Gullwing as well, but not quite the same.
My feeling is like, I've always felt as a little bit of a European guy and a Japanese guy, I've always felt like a Nova is just not a good enough jumping off point for a really cool car. It's too, as cool as you can make it, It's still a Nova, but if you start jumping off with a Mercedes Gullwing or a 308 Mercedes or sometimes
Ferrari
or a Z car, something like that, you have a better jumping off point, you get an even cooler piece. Do you share that thought, Dave?
I certainly do. And you know, when we got to the SEMA show and I heard there was another Gullwing there, I was a little taken back because I haven't seen aside from the BASF Chip Foose job that was there a couple of years ago. I mean, it's rare to see a Mercedes Gullwing. And you know, the beautiful part of that that car is that it's just that. It's not another 32 Ford. It's not another 67 Mustang. It's not another 69 Camaro. And you know, yeah, you can certainly, you know, go to the moon and really build a really kick-ass motor, you know, muscle car. But starting out with something that's so iconic and you know, so desirable in the first place, but now we've made it something that, boy, you'd love to get in it, take it, and have a track day at Sebring, or you know, do whatever you'd like to do. The car's a very drivable 635 horsepower. It certainly is going to be a lot of fun to drive for the client, Rich. And you know, I'll be honest with you. I've always said I don't have a favorite car. The next car I finish is my favorite. And secretly, since it's just us, you know, talking, that is my favorite car. I've actually tried buying it three times now from Rich, and he won't sell it to me.
Only if you knew a guy who could build another one.
Yeah, I looked. Right. I was watching the first episode, so I got home late last night, and I went to Jimmy Kimmel's birthday party, and I just got home late. And I knew I was going to be talking to you the following morning, so I just turned on the show. And I wasn't expecting to see that car, but I saw the first half of the episode of you getting the car and stretch, you know, throwing a tape measure on one actual 1955. I got too many damn. There's a 355 Ferrari and a 300 SL and a 308 and a 328. I'm so nuts with. There's too many cars, too many numbers, and my brain is atrophying. Right. So it used to be so easy. So, I saw you find an original Gullwing and throw a tape on it, and then see just how far off the shell that you got was. Was there a reason why we were speculating before we got you on the phone as to why the original sort of kit car wouldn't have just been made to spec, or did they have to have it off for sort of legal purposes?
I believe that's it. So the actual history behind those replicas, there was only 20 of them built around 2005 to 2007 by Classic Coachworks out of Florida. And that car was actually commissioned by Alice Cooper, which obviously has had other cars built from them. I think the Scrape Roadsters and Coupes. And so, I mean, the proportions of this kit car, if it was sitting by itself, you'd be like, oh, man, that's really a cool car. The minute you really start to study it, and if you have, you know, a die-cast model of one, or as we did, access to an original, you could certainly tell that there was a lot of the proportions off. And I think that legally, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm certainly going to find out, because my intentions are actually to scan that car and reproduce them in carbon fiber, because I will have to have one myself now. But I think it's the legal part of it. I think the silhouette or something to that effect has to be off by 20%.
Interesting.
And in doing that research, I actually found a company, I believe they were either out of England or out of Germany, that had basically repopped an exact, pulled molds off from the original. And I also seen the follow-up pictures of the legal team going in there and basically removing the bodies off of the chassis, and also the aftermath after crushing them and the molds.
Wow.
So as you can imagine, there's quite an expense to, you know, create a mold, and certainly in carbon fiber, the molds and the process of doing a body, my cost could be over $100,000 per body. But I think the juice is worth the squeeze, as long as I don't find out at the end that it was illegal to do it.
Well,
you know, so obviously we'll have to make some changes and that type of stuff, but I think that's why that car was so off.
Yeah.
So we were sort of thinking that too. And also, I don't know, you wonder if there's a statute of limitations, you know, after 50 years, like there are with patents and things like that. But I guess as long as Mercedes is around, that's their intellectual property. I'm going to throw mine out because, and then you tell me, and Matt will can chime in as well. You know, in terms of a jumping off car, and again, it's a weird, we're in a weird place because you think, well, a Ferrari Daytona to me would be a great jumping off spot for a guy like Dave to start breathing on that car, but those cars are 600 to 700 grand. So that's not exactly the shell of a Nova. And I guess, sadly, nobody re-pops them. I'd like to live in a world where we could just re-pop everything, and you could have your hot rod Daytona with your crate motor in it and whatever, and let Dave do all the things to it he wanted. But what is your jumping off platform? What car, if you had a magic wand, what car do you think is crazy sexy that you'd love to get your hands on?
Oh, well, that's a pretty easy one. I've already done it. My very first choice is actually a 55 Mercedes Gullwing. But in a very close second, 69 Lamborghini Miura S. I think it's just one of the sexiest body styles.
Yeah,
bar none. We've got a good friend with one. I've spent a lot of time just sitting in it and dreaming. And we've transported it back and forth to Pebble Beach a couple of times. And I absolutely just love that car. But I think that that car would be a great platform to do a modern drivetrain. Certainly, I think I'm an intelligent enough guy, and I have enough love for cars that I truly would have a hard time if my client had brought me a real Gullwing, for instance, and just chop it up and do what we did. I think it would be cool if there was nobody else watching, because it would just be one person's love of driving the car and having that performance, but out of an original. But I also have my limitations. Perfect example, the Futurelander, when we first bought that, our intentions were to customize it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Those things are worth a ton of money now.
Internet company.
Yeah.
What's that?
Those things are worth a ton of dough, right?
Yeah. So as we did more research and we had found number three that was on loan to the guys at in Gilmore, Michigan, doing number 10 for the Automotive and Truck Museum, we basically started looking at it and we're like, yeah, we could do this and update the drivetrain. And it was supposed to be for a big software company, for Fusion.io. And the more we did research about it and we realized how rare it was and how important it was and what the value of that was, we were like, yeah, I think we're going to go ahead and restore this. And so that's what we did. And I think that was the right thing to do. But now with all of the scanning and stuff that we've done on, I've got every bit of information, dimensions, shapes, degrees, everything about that vehicle. I could go back there in my shop right now and start putting hat sections and a frame together in a modern drivetrain and put it on air and maybe add another axle and, you know, just do some really cool stuff with it. But that's what I would do. I don't think that in my right mind, I wouldn't take a 69 Lamborghini Miura S and, cut the whole floor out of it and put a roadster shop chassis in it and that kind of stuff. I do have my limits, I guess, of what I think is reasonable to do and what not to do.
Well, here's a follow-up question. And I agree. I think we think the Lamborghini Miura, I think for me, be SV. Is the best looking thing that ever left a factory. S is fine too. We've had a couple of those throughout our lifetime. So we're right with you in the Miura department. But as I was saying to Matt, we're familiar with, I think his name is Mr. Lee. I think it's his last name.
Yeah, I was going to say David Lee. I think it's David Lee. He's got the Dino.
Yeah, he's the jeweler with the Dino. Now, he's got a Dino, and he didn't cut it up, but he did put some rims on it, some repop, and put some like 17s on there. He's got running fuel injection. He's breathed on it.
It's got a different engine. It's got like an F40 engine or something in it.
Oh, does it? So in this world,
cool.
You do this thing where you're like, okay, you've got a Dino Ferrari. A nice Dino Ferrari is worth 300 grand, maybe 400 grand,
yeah.
300 to 400 grand for a nice Dino. So, all right, what are we doing an engine swap for him? What are we putting different rims on it and bare brakes on it for or whatever? Because how's that going to work after we get divorced and we have to sell it? And people are like, this is not I got to put this car back. But this guy has taken this car out and shown it so much that it is now known as this Dino.
Yeah.
And maybe this Dino in a world of, I don't know, 4,000 Dinos or something, or 2,000 Dinos, maybe this Dino is worth more than other Dinos.
Right. Now it's a little more special in a sea of quite a few of them out there, you know, which is also interesting because you mentioned the Miura and you know, there very well could be a shell of a Miura out there. There could be something's been parted out or something, you know, not much is left, or you can piece together a front clamshell in the rear and, you know, pick up a few pieces to start with, enough just to start with. And then you're right. And then you add your Roadster shop chassis and you do some interior stuff and do whatever. Like, but there might be enough pieces out there to start with. Who knows? I am curious.
Well, in that case, honestly, Matt, that would be a car that I would be like, well, you know what? Most of it's missing anyway. There is no matching numbers to put the car back to an original state, and the cost, of course, of restoring something compared to modifying it. My honest opinion, let's just take a 60 Corvette, for instance. Restoration on a decent car at a really good shop, a reputable shop, doing a proper job to make a perfect restoration is about $250,000 to $300,000 to do it properly. Now, you can put that same $300,000 in and put in a Roadster shop chassis, an LSX 454 Harup injection or an 8-stack injection boiler, whatever. You do all that stuff. The car's actually valued differently than the stock one. The stock one, you're lucky to get $85,000 out of a restored Corvette that's all numbers matching, unless it was something super rare like a Fuelie or a tanker. And at the flip side, we watched Barrett Jackson last year. A good friend of mine sold a 58, I believe. Black with silver coves, red interior, and that car pulled $400,000.
Well, it's so, very. I'm glad you brought this up, Dave. First off, why aren't we eating lunch twice a week? Because
I know
I feel a kinship. Matt, you're out. Dave, you're in. No, I
hey, nice knowing you, Matt.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying you can't come around and watch us eat. I there's so many times I talk to car guys and you just talk to them and they go, I'm a car guy. I love cars. Blah, blah, blah. And then you go, what do you like? Mopar. I'm all Mopar. It's all Mopar all the time. It's the only thing I care about. And then you go, I have a Miura. And they go, what's that? You know, and I go, oh, I have a 935 Porsche. And they go, I don't know what you're talking about. It's got to be a Mopar. And then I realize I hate that guy. It's like somebody who you talk to and you go, I love music. You love music. I love music. We love music. He's like, I love DJ Khaled. And then you're like, oh no. So Dave,
you like sandwiches.
When you brought up the Miura, the Gullwing, when I've seen your show, I've seen your shop. You have good taste, which not a lot of guys have. But the interesting thing, the Dino, by the way, Mr. Lee bought it for $260K, and it says he put over $1 million into it. But I don't feel like it would take him. Well, if he bought a F40 engine for $800,000 or something.
Yeah,
but
maybe we can find out what engine it is.
And by the way, Dave, you should know that I just got done putting $138,000 into a Datsun 510. So
that's true.
Sweet. So is it in a box in the back in the trunk, or is it actually you bought parts with that?
What's
funny is a lot of people, you know, on my TV show especially, and even when people walk into my showroom, into my office, and they start pointing at the cars that we have on display in the showroom, so how much was that to build? I never kiss and tell. And there's two reasons behind that. First, I don't want them to form an opinion that I've screwed somebody out of a lot of money that person doesn't have an understanding of how much work and time goes into making a car that anybody could get under that dash and not be, you know, blown away with, they really put the wiring like that or whatever. My cars are perfect inside and out, even where you don't see them. The other side is when you don't tell them, it leaves the imagination open, because a lot of times they'll try and guess and they'll be like, that car's got to be at least $90,000. And it's like, man, that's how much it cost to wash it last time. Are you kidding me?
Right. The paint was $90,000.
Yeah. Well, this is a historic Trans Am and B sedan race car, so it's got a lot of history. So it's probably
cool.
It's got a brass tag on it and everything, so it's probably worth something
it's worth at least $138,000.
Well, not necessarily.
Hopefully.
Not necessarily, but it's a really cool piece, and we'll go out and vintage race it.
Real quick, Dave, what engine did you put in this Gullwing?
So the Gullwing's got a LSX 454, and it's got the Australian Harup injection. And so something that was pretty key on that, the intake manifolds. We 3D printed those because looking at the pictures of an original straight six that would have come in that car is, you know, is one thing, but it had those big aluminum logs going left to right. Mm-hmm. The exhaust was up pretty high. And so we wanted to kind of emulate that same thing. And so another big thing that we did on the Harup injection is normally it has a cover over the linkage. Well, the original motor had exposed linkage, and that was very important for us to also kind of showcase and give it that mechanical look. Even though we were going to hide all of the wires for the fuel injection and everything else, we wanted a very mechanical look. So the whole package, you know, working with Rich Buckley on building that car, he was very adamant about trying to keep a lot of things that would have looked that way original had they built it that way. So,
it looks amazing. Chris, can you find a picture of that engine? The plenum, intake plenum, whatever we're calling it, it looks cast. Is it? Did you give it a finish?
It's so trick.
It's cast?
Yeah, so it's 3D printed. We use a Stratasys 3D printer. And those in particular pieces are 65% nylon, 35% carbon. So it's very strong. It seals up. And then what we did on the outside is we basically just sanded any of the 3D print tracks, you know, because it does leave a little bit of a track when you print it.
Mm-hmm.
We sanded that all down. We put a primer on it. And then we did a rocker shoots. And the trick was is we have, you know, different reductions will give you a different texture for like the bottom of a car with like a German rocker shoot. And so what Bryce, our body shop manager, did is I was like, well, let's go with the finest. I want it to look the most like a sandcasted aluminum. And I was kind of a little bit concerned about it because the finest was still kind of smooth and bubbly. And he came out and grabbed me, and I walked into the booth, and he showed me. He stood back 4 feet, and it was drying as it hit, so it went on, and it looks exactly like sandcasted aluminum. We finished it off with Ferrari silver and then a matte clear. And so it's easy to clean. It looks rough. You can actually wipe it, and it's smooth. And it just worked out perfect. It's such a cool key piece to the inside of the engine bay, as I always call it, the jewelry box.
What a goddamn world we're living in, because I was just looking at this
technology's
thing.
Technology's beautiful.
Right?
Well, in the right hands, you know. Give it to the Germans in the middle of the 40s, and now we got a problem. I was looking at this picture, and I was like, by God, those plenums look cast. And then I thought, wait a minute, how could you cast those plenums? It just seems so involved. And I was like, but they look cast. And I wasn't at the car, and it wasn't. So you 3D printed those things, and then you gave them the finish. And wow, you want to talk about win-win. That's just unbelievable.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, it was something that, honestly, I mean, there's so many talented builders out there, and I've got great friends, you know, all across the country, you know, George Panier and the Roadster Shop, Phil and Jeremy are great friends. You know, I've known Chip for quite a few years, and he's just a very talented guy, and there's a lot of different takes on how to create a custom car. And something that's pretty specific about Condigate Design in my eye and the way I communicate with my customers is I can make a spaceship out of a 32 Ford Roadster. It's guaranteed. I could do whatever crazy stuff you want to do. My idea is always to keep something that's not going to be out of style in 3 years or do anything that's trendy. I always want to do something that 30 years from now, the car would still be in style. And a lot of our vehicles, for instance, you don't see a stereo deck in it, but most all of our cars come with a big kicker stereo. Everything's hidden, and it's all on Bluetooth off of your phone, which that, you know, technology constantly changes. So, I just don't want to look at a modern stereo in a classic car. So it's very key to not ever put one in.
I was saying to Matt the other day, when we were talking about architecture and styling, that you just can't have stuff that puts a time stamp on it. And so many people make that mistake. And then you walk into their kitchen 10 years later and you go, oh, I know when you did this kitchen.
I know when
you did this bathroom.
Like within 3 years, I know. Like,
I mean, there range. Are great old Spanish places from the 20s and the 30s in Hollywood, and you go walking into the kitchen and it's avocado and burnt orange. It's like, this looks like the Brady Bunch house. And you did the kitchen in 1974, or that's when the kitchen was done. And you don't, that's what I would say to Matt all the time. You want to avoid that.
Yeah.
You always want to avoid that, and it's just a design thing. I think it holds true with automobiles, and it holds true with architecture. Mm-hmm. And something that you mentioned that I want to circle back to, which is nice, and it's something that Matt and I have been discussing throughout the last year or so, which is I am glad. So, you know, back in the day, I'd always say, you know, Christopher Titus would give Chip Foose $400,000. He would make him something with a surfboard rack. He'd get it back. He'd drive it around for 2 years. Then he'd get divorced. Then he'd put the thing across the auction block at Mecum, and he'd get $41,000 for it. And I thought,
right,
that sucks.
That sucks.
But and that
certainly does.
That went around for a little while. But now you look at the auctions, just like you talked about with the 1960 Corvette.
Yeah.
When something is done right and done by someone with the right reputation, mm-hmm. people are starting to appreciate that, and they're voting with their wallets, right?
Exactly. Well, and thank God for all of them. So the 21 window bus that I sold at Barrett Jackson that was featured, 2 years ago on our Bitchin' Rides, I had an investment in, and leading up about the month before the auction that it was consigned to, my wife was like, no more spending money on this thing. We're just throwing money away. This is, you know, no more consignment vehicles, no more projects or spec cars, whatever, leading up to it. Well, I had a total of a reasonable amount of money because I was paying for the labor, you know, true cost and everything else. So I had an investment in it, obviously. When that broached $200,000, went to $250,000, $275,000 when we were on the auction block on that Saturday afternoon, it hammered at 275. They show it as breaking the record at 302.5 because they put their 10% on it. And as we were walking off the stage, my wife punched me with her shoulder, with her elbow, and she says, we need to find another one of those.
Well,
so sometimes you win, you know, because we got a lot more than what I had into it. But it was, you know, somebody wanted it that bad. Well, actually two people, and it ran the number up.
You did it right. I mean, that's obviously it's not going to work if you don't do it right. I watched that episode closely. And the reason I watch it closely is it was a European vehicle, which mm-hmm. is interesting to me, even though it's a bus. But that is also a vehicle that now, if you just did it bone stock and to the nines, you could probably sell it to Fluffy.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Iglesias. Yeah. It sells to the comedian. You could probably sell it to him for $150. So that car has some good value to it. A 21 or 23 window, I'm sorry.
Yeah, 21 window.
21.
Yeah.
All right. So those things are, you know, $100,000 plus.
Yeah.
So now you're kind of screwing around a little bit because that ain't a VW Bug that it would fetch you $9,000 if it was tits.
Right.
This is $100.
If it was 20 years ago, you could get them for $8,000 for a really nicely done one that somebody built out of the garage and probably did a nice job. But it's funny how the modified ones are actually going for so much more if it's done tastefully and it's done proper than even a restored one. There was a really nicely set up one with tons of accessories last year. It was a camper. And maybe it's not as desirable as the 21 window deluxe with the big sliding sunroof, but still, it was a very nice piece. And I think it only fetched, $110,000. And I think it had a matching trailer that went with it.
Yeah. So but again, that's
right by it with a hot rod.
But that's because that was you breathing on it, and not, you know, some others who may have not made some of the same choices you made. And ultimately, the good news is, if you build it and you build it right and people can see it, then they'll get their checkbooks out, which is I just don't feel like 8 years ago that's what people were doing. Now we're there.
Yeah.
And it's good because it's great for the hobby, because in terms of talking the wife into spending $400,000 on a car that Dave does for you, if the wife says, but after we get divorced and that thing's worth 60, no go, that's a tougher sell.
Yeah.
Well, no, you know, here's the deal is if it is 400 and you get a divorce and it's going to go for 60, you just get your buddy to buy it and then just buy it back from him.
That's what I'm planning. I mean, yeah, good idea. Why are you telling me? All right, Dave Kindig. I love the show, man. Bitchin' Rides, new episodes, Tuesdays, 9 o'clock on Velocity. You're out of Utah, right?
Yep, Salt Lake City, Utah, born and raised.
God, love that place. I've done a
beautiful.
I've done a few shows there. You walk through Salt Lake City, and you're like, "Where's all the trash? Where's the graffiti? What's going on around here? Right. So nobody lives here." Yeah. And they're like, "No, a lot of people live here. They just don't throw trash around.
They don't want to throw trash out.
Yeah, it's not a pit.
There's not a toilet out back.
Yeah, I may be moving there soon enough. And
well, good enough. I'll save you an office.
Please, I'd love to come take a tour of that place. I really dig
anytime.
The work you're doing. Thanks, Dave. We appreciate it.
Hey, I really do appreciate it. You guys enjoy the rest of your week, and let's do it again.
Please.
Sounds good.
I got a lot to talk to him about. All right, take care of some business.
Dave Kendig. He's at kendigit.com. Check him out. He's on Twitter and Instagram at Kendigit Designs. And I'm going to tell you guys about Xibar. This is an ultra-thin coating for manifolds, headers, turbos, tailpipes, mufflers, and tips. It has a thickness of 0.001 inch, which reduces radiant heat by 90%. It's the first DIY thermal coating of its kind, and that is impressive. I saw this. They had a Camaro done up in their booth at SEMA, and everything was coated. It was nice. They did such a good job. It's non-corrosive and does not break down even in 2,000-degree environments. It makes wraps, shields, and expensive ceramic coatings obsolete. Use Xibar for better engine performance, horsepower, and fuel economy, and lower underhood temperatures as well. Xibar comes in four awesome colors: bronze, midnight black, cast silver, and Porsche gray that will make your engine a showpiece. I think I saw the bronze when I was out there. It looks good. Xibar is available for purchase at Zycoat.com and many auto parts retail locations. Put Xibar on, take heat off. It's at Zycoat.com, Z-Y-C-O-A-T.com.
All right, let's see. What do we have left on our list of things to do? Yeah, so I got my different drummer 510s coming home soon.
Yeah, looks good.
Looks good. Saw the pictures. Excited about that car. I feel like I knew I would like Dave just from watching a show, but I like that guy's take. And of course, when he said Mura, people do, I think they do it all the time where they go like, "Oh, of course you like him because he agrees with you." Yes.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. When somebody tells me things that they like, I know whether they have good taste or not. And people go, "Well, that's convenient because it matches with your taste." So fuck you. It does. Yeah. I do understand. I'm not one of these fuck shit sticks, suck dick cocks who go, "Oh, well, you think that's funny, but I think this is funny." So, no, I'm an expert, bitch. I'm fucking better than you are. So if I tell you something is funny, it is funny. If I tell you that's good architecture, it is good architecture. If I tell you that's cool furniture, it is cool furniture. If I tell you that's a good song, it is a good song. If I tell you your song sucks, it does suck. If I tell you that car is a great shape, it is a great shape because I'm more evolved. Okay? That's it. I'm so fucking tired of everyone fucking pitching their shit to me, which fucking garbage. Gabe had to walk in right in the middle of us talking about fucking music and everything. Your fucking garbage shit is just that. It's garbage. And you're dumb for sticking to it. And one day when you get older, you'll be embarrassed. It's like you fucking sitting around with a fucking mullet and explaining to me how cool you look, and it's 1987, and I'm trying to explain to you, you don't look good in this mullet, and you're fucking saying to me, "You'll be sorry one day that there's not pictures of you in a mullet and stonewashed jeans," and I go, "Okay," and then we go ahead to 2018, and we find a fucking picture of you in your mullet and your stonewashed jeans, and you look like an asshole. Well, I'm here during the present to tell you that.
Yeah.
I don't need to go ahead 25 years. I'll tell you right now what's working and what's not working. And Dave's stuff works.
Yeah.
And his answer about not wanting to put a timestamp on a product or a project is exactly what I said to you three nights ago when I was walking my dog about interior design.
Right.
I had a beautiful Hacienda house like from the 20s, and my wife's like, "We got to go shabby chic." And I'm like, "No, we're not going shabby chic. we're only going shabby chic because that's what's going on in 2005.
Right.
But then when people come back in 2018, they'll go, oh, I guess you did this in 2004, 2005. I don't want that. And you shouldn't want it. And stop sticking with your horrible taste. Focus on me and what I want.
Yeah.
And listen to me. Listen to me. Am I right, Max Pata?
Always.
Okay. Who was focused on buying Japanese cars when everyone thought Japanese cars were junk? Like, and not, and by the way, not welcome to any of these events.
I know.
Who was buying
Forget
Japanese
Monterey.
Race cars when they were free and not welcome anywhere? The guy's wrong all the time? The guy who doesn't like the Beastie Boys could be dead wrong, or could be, I happen to know music and they fucking suck. Everyone should just come to me and ask me what's going on. I write a fucking book called In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicked because I knew where we were going. I bought a bunch of Japanese cars because I knew there were great cars. I knew they won and I knew where it was going. I mean, we just came back from Laguna Seca for the Rolex Historics, and Nissan was the mark. That when I bought my first Nissans, that was an unthinkable scenario.
Yeah.
Unfucking-thinkable. Max Pata.
I don't think they had Nissans at Monterey 7 years ago.
You've learned.
Any Japanese car.
But why would anyone argue with anything I say anytime?
Look, the proof is there because I went to SEMA, and the hot ticket items were the Japanese cars, the fair ladies, all the
yeah.
cars, all that. Like, I've seen them grow because I, to be honest, and it's a no question. I didn't know anything about cars before working for you, Adam. So I've gone to SEMA many years in a row, and I've just seen the evolution of more and more Japanese cars.
More and more. And I did find that picture of that 280ZX that I emailed you.
Yeah. Ugh.
It was weird.
Yuck. But at least they're using
but there was,
it.
That's what I said. Someone's I saw them. One there.
I know. What the hell was wrong with that car?
That was like a one of these modern car audio builds. So it had it was in the north hall with all the car audio and alarm guys, and it was a 280ZX, but it had the 2-liter turbocharged Cadillac engine in it, and it had a full like Cadillac interior. That was weird to me.
Yeah, the outside
was...
It was
kind of like ATS.
The outside was weird,
yeah.
too. All right, let me tell you what's not weird. Castrol Edge, you can tweet us. Are we doing a Castrol Challenge here?
Oh, no.
No, sorry, all right. Just let me tell you about Castrol Edge. And go ahead and tweet us your questions at hashtag Castrol Challenge. And I'll answer them on the air. Formulated with fluid titanium technology, reduces friction, maximizes engine performance 3 times stronger against viscosity breakdown. Then the leading oils, it is the best. It is Castrol Edge. Mm-hmm. All right. Anaheim Grove coming up November 30th, live pod there with Rob Riggle up on stage. We got a cruise coming up next year. We got some Christmas crates from Corolla Drinks. You can go there and get some discounts and say hi to Lynette. Chassis, new shows always over there on the Chassis channel on Pluto TV 501. And all sorts of stuff going on, all sorts of cool car things going on chassis.com, 2S1. Shift and Steer, you can listen at Podcast One.
We got a great interview with David Freiberger and then Jesse James coming up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And you can check out our website, carcastshow.com, and shoot us a tweet. Follow Matt at Motorator. Until next time, Adam Kroll for Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Carcast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.